Tonight we're going to be looking at an interesting halacha, Rabbi Sai. Many years ago, my brother, I have a brother who has got a bit of, he's got a little bit less time on his hands now. But he still does a bit. He's got a bit of a, he likes antiques for him. Runs a little bit in the family. So the difference between him and me is that he's got the funds for it. He can actually afford them. I can just like dream about them. So he's got, he likes antiques. And many years ago, this is going back, he bought something. I don't remember the background, how he actually ended up buying it, but he bought something. I think he only had a few minutes to make a decision and everything, and he bought something. And it turns out that, I don't think he'll make such a mistake anymore now, but he turns out that the Chumash that was an antique Chumash, and it was printed in Germany, and upon further investigation, it turns out it was not the famous, Moshe Mendelssohn, otherwise known as Moshe Dessauer's translation of the Chumash, which has upper curses in it, or partially upper curses. The beginning of the Reform Movement really started in that, what it was called the Bild, the first real translation to German, and it led to the Reform, to the Haskalah, etc. So it wasn't actually that, but similar enough, it was just in those lines. So in other words, he bought a Chumash, which was a proper Chumash with Rashi on one side, on the other side, a translation which was not according to Chazal, which was not according to our understanding and our Mesoiras and our... And the question was, soon after realizing it, there was some really questionable translations. The question was, what is he meant to do with this? So at first glance you say, well, you've got to put it in, it's upper curses. Upper curses, we know, you've got to burn upper curses. You've got to burn upper curses. Burn it. But a second thought was that one second here, I can't actually burn it because, yeah, and the other side is like it's a chumash and rashi, proper chumash and rashi. So whatever you do, it's in a no-win situation. Can't burn it because it's chumash. You can't really put it in Seamus, because how on earth are you going to put in Seamus something which is that kind of what are you going to do with it? What's that?
If it's published by a non-Jew, it could be burnt or torn up with Hashem's name in.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to see that. Pardon? No, it didn't. That technically didn't work. I don't remember exactly the design of it, but it wasn't so easy. Never mind the fact that he spent a lot of money on it, but that's besides the point. Drop less, I imagine. I don't remember the figure, but.
He's going to buy Madonna's shirt. He's purchased himself for $7 million.
What's that? What the? Oh, I see. For seven. Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. No, can he sell it on? Rabbi, so let's see the halacha. Let's see what's the halacha. So this is the halacha. So we're going to see this now. Beis Hashem. So similar metasiv base. So we discussed in Sif Aleph that the Sefer Torah, which is written by a slave, a woman, etc., that you can't is possible. Now Sif Beis adds the following halacha: culture possible, koisvon possible, bechol tikkun asiyoson. So anybody who is not allowed to write culture possible, lekoisvon, whoever is not allowed to write mezuzah, tefillin, sefer Torah, etc., such as the ones mentioned above, yeah? So those, posel b'chol tikkun asiyoson, they may not fix and arrange and sort out the tefillin. So in other words, if something is wrong with your tefillin, you need to go over it, the paint, the black, or to make the knot of the tefillin shel Rosh, or what else could be a problem? Stitching. Yeah? If anything needs to be done, don't ask your wife to do it. I've got a busy day at work today, lots of meetings, I'll be home late. Do you mind to just go over my tefillin? No, because she can't write the tefillin, she can't fix the tefillin. So a pre-bar mitzvah as well. He really fancies painting the tefillin? No,
No, because culture possible that culture possible possible be called tikkun atzias. That was Seif base.
On what stage in the formation of the
tefillin
is it a problem? Because presumably earlier on in the stage of tefillin making, you have goyim that are involved in the
tefillin. Which part are you referring to? So no, so really, most parts are done by Eid. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be done. Many parts of the creation of tefillin, actually, as we've learned, have to be done in Shema, and that can only be done by Eid. Yeah. So now, Seif Gimel teaches us Ge shechazal edosoi machmas yiro. A ge shechazal edosoi that went back to his original belief system. So this was a goy who became a ger, and then he changed his mind. He changed his mind, and he went back to his original belief system. But he didn't go back to his original religion. Generally, he only went back to Buddhism because not genuinely, just mishumiro, because of fear. For instance, his family said, "If you stay a Jew, we might even." Mishnah Berurah mentions, "If caught in Dalav Yir Shelo Yagu," he's scared that people are going to kill him. So a person like that, again, this is the Ger, so a Gentile who became a Jew, and now he's scared that they're going to kill him. So therefore, he's going back to his Hinduism. He's going back to the Sikh, not generally, just because that's what he's... So a person like that, kosher lichtoiv tefillin, he's allowed to write tefillin. Why?
He was an homeless.
His machmas, yeah. Mishnah Berurah said...
Why are we talking about again?
Inquisition. Mishnah Berurah Sefkot Yudalef. Let's see Mishnah Berurah Sefkot Yudalef. Yirah,
b'shelo yagu. What about a ger or any Jew who wrote to fit in, and he's done it for the years, and then suddenly he goes off to Derech?
Off to Derech.
After he's written to fit in, are those to fit in?
Yeah, they will remain kosher.
Will they remain kosher?
They will remain kosher, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Yirah, b'shelo yagu, Sefkot Yudalef, b'shelo yagu. He's scared that people are going to kill him. Again,
a Hamas person, like
yeah.
He converted to Judaism, and he's like a proper Haredi Yid.
Yeah, I mean there is part of the Batei Dinim who do through conversions. There is a problem that it's very very hard. The process takes years, but there's always going to be a bit of a question in the Batei Dinim. You speak to Daryonim who do these the Geiros. They will tell you that there's always a little bit, there is an enormous amount of people who want to become Yidden. The gay market is very big, and it takes years to become a Yid. But even after all those years and difficulties and the payment they have to, the expenses and the tests and the assessments and the learning they have to do, etc., there's always a little bit of a danger that they don't exactly understand why he's going through this and what he's doing this for. And who knows what happens after they've done the ger, he's become a ger, what happens after 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, 20 years. And there has been some research in the Batei Dinim who have gone through, you know, all the conversions. What happened is everybody still on track? And yes, the majority they are, because the Batei Dinim that we have nowadays, Baruch Hashem, are very good. But there is a small minority. There is an existent small minority of people that go back to they drop it all. But our component, Mishmur says, although this individual should have really sacrificed his life, he should have sacrificed his life for Yiddishkeit. He's not been excluded of Yiddishkeit because of that. Because he is a genuine oynes.
Saying he's actually become a
Russia,
or he doesn't believe.
Yeah.
You can't have both bits of both.
Yeah. Like, so what you are saying is precisely what he quotes now in the name of the Magen Avraham. I'm Magen Avraham. He said it doesn't make any sense. Either or. Like,
what's going on, but you can't play the game. Vafulim betzina who shomeres atoy rak shibanochas tefininu misatzel. Everybody makes a distinction. Is he on the generally? Is he keeping Torah mitzvah? Is it just tefillin that he can't do, or is it generally gone completely back? And but the Magen Avraham, I understand the Magen Avraham probably better than the other opinions, because why are we saying why should he be? So he's thrown everything off boards. So why is tefillin kosher? Now the that's the machlokes between the Shulchan Aruch and the Magen Avraham. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, Siv Dalet, tefillin shekosva apikoyres yisufu. What happens with tefillin who was written by an apikoyres? What's an apikoyres? An apikoyres is an individual who is not apikoyres, who is a mean, who doesn't believe in anything. Where does by the way, just as a side note, where does the name apikoyres? We use the word apikoyres regularly. Yeah. So where does the word apikoyres come from? That's it. The Greek was a theologian, or what was he? A Greek Epicure, I think his name was. Epicure?
He worshipped nice things.
Right. And that was his name, Epicure. So that's where Apicurus comes from.
An English word called Epicurean. Somebody who likes nice things.
Oh, really?
Worshipping luxuries, yeah.
Wow, that's very interesting. There you go. Right.
Big schuss.
Yeah. I'm always not a problem. If he doesn't know, it doesn't matter in terms of the cash that's filling. Pardon? If he's able to write the tefillin, yeah, why not? As long as he keeps the Torah properly, the Shemaim, yeah. Tefillin shekosva apikoyres yisufu. Shulchan Aruch said tefillin which written by apikoyres must be burnt. Ve'ish oimrim, the others say yignezu. They have to be put in shemus. So there you go. One opinion says burn those tefillin written by an apikoyres. If you don't believe in Hashem, put those tefillin in the burn them now, right away, in the Sefer Chometz. Put those tefillin in, and they'll say, "What do you mean? How can you put those tefillin in the fire? Put them in Shemus." Yeah, that's cool. You're right. There is a musik of somebody who is a mean ledover echot. There is such a musik as well. Correct. But generally, when you use it, and the Mishnah Bialoch very extensive, but when we generally use the word apikoyres, it means somebody who doesn't believe in Hashem. That's generally the how the poskim use that terminology of apikoyres. Is it equivalent to the Reform nowadays? Wow, that's a controversial question. Is it the same than the Reform movement nowadays? Yeah, so most people will say yes.
The red lines are Torah Messina, and
they don't believe in Torah Messina, yeah.
Yeah, they've reached the red lines, of course.
Yeah, there is some people who will argue that even within the Reform movement, there are people out there who are not such starke believers, they're not full reformers. And the main reason what draws into the Reform movement, I haven't done the statistics, but and the research, but some people who belong to the Reform movement is more than anything else, it's plain ignorance. So there's no real belief in it, there's no hashkafas in it, but it's ignorance more than anything else. If that's true, that it's pure ignorance, and with a bit of learning, and a bit of conversation, and with a bit of input and intervention, they would believe in the main beliefs of Yiddishkeit, then, if that's true, then they're probably not really considered apikoyresim, if that's true. The leaders, for sure. The leaders are apikoyresim, yeah. But it changes also. There's periods of, you know, when you're looking at the years, there's no question about it. The very, very first generation of the Haskalah, they were not probably considered apikoyresim. The second generation, the third generation, they certainly were apikoyresim. How to look at it nowadays, it depends also on the countries a little bit, and on the authorities and the, yeah. Okay, Rabbi says, Seif Hei says, Nimtzu biyad apikoyres, ve'en yodu amikosvam yignezu. What happens if you find tefillin? You find tefillin, and you're not sure. You find tefillin in the hands of an apikoyres. So you found these articles. When you do a mikosvam and you don't know who wrote them, Yignazu, they should put in Shemus. You don't know who wrote them. So I remember I went once to a very famous, very, very famous batimacher in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. His name is Kahan, a very, very famous batimacher. There's not that many batimachers. It's very hard. It's very hard to be a batimacher. It's really, really hard. And the equipment costs tens of thousands of pounds. And you need a lot of expertise, a lot of shemush, a lot of mesoiras. It's not many. Kahan is very well known because Avi Lashi bought tefillin by him and Rav Shlomo Zalman bought tefillin by him. So he's a very famous batimacher. So a couple of times I went to him just out of... Yeah, more than anything else. I it was pretty curious. It was very interesting. It was really interesting to go to the batimacher. It's 50, if I remember correctly, it was 50,000 tons, the pressure that you put to, you know, you've got to make the shape of the tefillin, yeah? So I don't know if it was 50,000 kilograms or 50,000 tons. I'm not sure anymore. But you've got to press it, the pressure that is put out in order to press out and squeeze out the shin. So anyway, so he then showed me a tefillin which he received. He sometimes gets random tefillin, because that's what he deals with, the tefillin macher. So he got random tefillin, and he says, these tefillin, I don't know what to do with them. I say, why? He said, look at the size. They were tiny. They were absolutely tiny. And he says, I don't know if they are kosher. I don't know if I should open them. I should not open them. I have no idea what to do with them. And he says, I have a feeling I have a problem with them. He says, I have a feeling this was in hands of a real apikoros. I say, what makes you think so? It's full of the size. There were dakois, which means they were very thin filling and very like soft filling, not like the filling we have got nowadays, which are gases, which are much stronger and solid. And we've spoken about that. They were soft filling, small filling. And he says, when you look at the tefillin shel Rosh, he says it was so wide, the opening was so, there was so,
the loop
was so big. He said, this was hanging on the tip of his nose, he said. It's probably hanging on the tip of his nose. He said, this is probably between the eyes in the simple sense. Be'enecho in a simple sense, not in the way we learn that he has to be on that. So he said, for me, he said, these are very... So I'm saying that he says that these feeling is probably categorizing what we're learning now. Nimtzu bi'ata pikoyres. All right. When you do a mikosvam, yignizu. If you get tefillin, you can't trace them back to a real from Elich Yeshamayim source. You've got to treat them as... maybe written by an apikoros, and they have to be put in Shemus. So if you find tefillin in the hands of apikoros, don't know who wrote them, you put them in Shemus. Nimtzu biyad einu. What happens if tefillin are found in the hands of a goy? What do you do with them? Tefillin found in the hands of a goy. Ve'einu do amikos, so we don't know who wrote them. Kshirim de akosha. I suppose... I don't know if that's true nowadays. What do you think about this halacha, gentlemen?
If you meet someone on the street, they have a chazaka of being
kosher. Yeah.
Why would it be any different for finding tefillin?
Because we're talking about if you find tefillin in the hands of a goy, and you don't know who wrote them. So Shulchan Aruch says you can assume they are kosher. Why would a goy write them?
Yeah.
They can't. They are goyim who know how to write. Absolutely. This is very true. I mean, we live in Golos, but in Herzl, most Arabs, they can read and write Ivrit a lot better than us. Right? I find it always very funny. Well, in some shuls, and I just don't get it. In some shuls, the code to get into the code is written Aleph Beis outside.
Google it.
Okay, forget about Googling. I said that There is this interesting halacha that I want to just start this now. So again, if you find so in other words, Rabbi Yisrael, if you go to the tube lost property, yeah, tube lost and find, or you go to Heathrow, you'll find tefillin there without question. You'll see tefillin there in Heathrow lost properties. You'll find loads and loads of tefillin. Yeah, so imagine how many people lose their tefillin in Heathrow Airport. I remember somebody that I wanted my help a few months ago who had forgotten his tefillin in Heathrow Airport. It was in the middle of a night flight and everything. And then he is, you know, one of those, you know, and then you rush and you miss the flight, and, you know, all that kind of tip classic scenarios, and, you know, and he lost the jewelry, which he wasn't able to recover, but then it fell in. So he tried to speak ended up in the lost property. So he came to the lost property and he described the tefillin. He said, you know, it's not like a coat or a scarf. You know, I want to describe it. Go through to the lost property and describing it to you. He said, and then the fellow was the agent over there. He said, oh, we've got loads of those over here. He describes it. He said, we've got loads of them over here. So yes, but if it's found by a go, you can assume this caution.
They're in lost property and they're not claimed. I think, I don't know, after a certain period of time, I don't know what they do with it, but would there not be a problem? Then they might just throw them away.
Yeah, so you're right. You shouldn't lose them. Then try to find them.
And if you can't find them,
then
you're not throwing them away, and non-Jew is throwing them away.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, it would probably be, you're right. I think a person has got spare time, and it's got access to Heathrow Airport, and he can, if sure, it's a great idea. Yeah, by all means, take them all, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, all right, okay, but in theory, it's a great idea. Give me a percentage. Do it and give me a percentage. Yeah. Okay, Abay Sai. The next halacha is the halacha of Ein Lokach Tefillin Mezuzas V'Sfor Min HaKusim. That's the halacha of not purchasing tefillin of a goy. Don't buy tefillin of a goy. Why? Where did he get it from? That's right. He might have got it from Heathrow Airport. Yeah. But he might have stolen them. And of course, don't buy them. More than their value. Because what if you pay a fortune for them, what's going to happen? He's going to do it again, right? There was a period of time. There was a tefillin in a certain shul, and there was a tefillin ganav. There was really a tefillin ganav. They caught him after this. They put CCTVs, but he literally went out to tefillin. So a person should not buy tefillin, which are, if you see a guy on the street and he want those, and give me 50 quid. So you know, if it's the loch is, if it's the value of tefillin you care, but don't overcharge him just because you know it's going to end up in the bin otherwise. Don't pay that overcharge.
Hundreds of pounds, really.
Yeah. If a normal set of tefillin is £2,000, so that's how much you pay for them. Don't pay more than that.
He's
going to
steal them.
Yeah. There's a true story. I'm going to finish off with that. This is a true story. There was a person that, I think it took place in America. Somebody was approached by some sort of goy, and he had this tefillin there, and he says, do you want to buy them? And this he'd realized straight away, this is a real gunner. He's stolen those tefillin. He didn't know what to do. So on the one hand, he wanted to buy them. On the other hand, he knew that if he's going to pay them the money, then he's going to do it again. So he says, how much? He gave him the figure, £2,000 for the $3,000 for the tefillin. And he said, oh, yeah, that's a bit much. He says, yeah, that's how much they're worth. That's how much they're worth. You know, you take it or leave it, take it or leave it. And the yid didn't know what to do. Should he buy them? Should he not buy them? And then he had this amazing idea. He says, can I just see them? And he takes it to tefillin shalosh. He says, this is this. And he says, yeah, I can see this is for the head and it's for the hand, but this is for the... This is for the left hand. Where's the one for the right hand? Where's the one for the right hand? Is it for the right hand? He said, yeah, this is just for one hand. Where's the other hand? He said, oh, I don't have that. Yeah. Oh, then it's missing. I'm not interested in buying a missing one. You got only half the set. You only got the half the set. Oh, okay, so I'm not interested. He said, no, sure, yeah, I'll give you a bargain. I'll give you 5 quid. Okay, very good. He took the tefillin. But halacha is, ain't looking tefillin, yosemich le demand. Don't buy tefillin for more. Don't buy tefillin of a good because you're encouraging that market. Rabbi Yisrael, we learned this evening the following halachas. We discussed that anybody who is not allowed to write tefillin shouldn't fix the tefillin. We learned that a goy who became a ger and now he's gone back to his old ways, to his goyish ways, he's okay to write tefillin according to Shulchan Aruch. Magnamam doesn't like it. He said, no. You can't, as we say, you can't dance on both chasnas. If you decided to go back to your old ways, you can't write tefillin. We further learned that tefillin which are written by an apikoros should be burnt, according to others they should be put in shemus. Tefillin which are found in the hands of an apikoros, you don't know where they come from, should be put in shemus. We learned also that tefillin which are in the hands of a goy, you don't know where they come from, they are kosher, you can assume they come from a yid. Finally, we learned that tefillin which are found by a goy who wants to sell tefillin, don't buy them for more money than their market value. Good evening, Abbo Yisrael.